MadPipe Madcast.
Welcome to the MadPipe Madcast, where we talk about marketing strategy and bring marketing insights to businesses and nonprofits. I'm Daniel DeGree, your host, and today my guest is Pierre Jansen of Lush Media, a graphic design company in New York City. Pierre, welcome to the show. Can you take just a moment and talk a little bit about what you do?
Good morning, Daniel. Thank you for having me. We are a graphic design studio. We're based in New York City. We focus on designing catalogs, brochures, packaging, as well as digital assets for small and medium-sized businesses.
And you, you're based in New York City, but you take clients all over the world. Is that correct?
Yes. We have clients in Asia and in Europe, and we Skype with them on a regular basis, and we show them three-dimensional models that we review online. And they're very happy to do so. So yes, we do have clients all over the world.
And I think also pretty much every size business, from small and medium business, large corporation, there's not really any limitations?
We usually start with companies that are about five employees and up. And we our larger clients are about 150 clients, 150 employees or less.
Okay. All right. So that gives us kind of a range. Can you give me a rundown, Pierre, of some of the things that you've done? Like, initially, when I think of graphic design, and I think a lot of people also, the first thing that comes to mind, even if we know it's more than that, is sort of logos, you know, digital images for different uses. But you do more than that. So can you give me a rundown of some of the things you've done that aren't just logos or digital images? Because I think a lot of us don't have a full picture of what a designer really does in the first place.
So we do a large array of we offer a large array of creative services. We, for example, offer, we're currently working on a project with a cosmetics company. And they initially came to us and they asked, can you create us a logo? And yes, we did. And from the logo, we went on to a stationery system that at that point became more of a branding project because they asked us to do the packaging. And the packaging, which started originally with about five SKUs, it turned out to be more like 150 SKUs in different color ranges and sizes. So this project is ongoing. It turned out to be so big that the client said, we should put you on a retainer and go on an ongoing basis because the project just keeps on flowing. And these are kind of the projects that we really like to work on because we can really get into the client's psyche and really get to the meat of the matter. And the client really gets to benefit most from the services that we offer.
You know, you say packaging, and I've seen, you know, because you could say packaging is boxing something up, but I've seen some of your work. And you've done some pretty fancy, high-end stuff where you may have a three-dimensional object, something that you're giving out, or even a print item. But the packaging around it is every bit as much a part of the design. And can you give me a couple of examples or an example of when that's been true, when I saw something the other day and the boxing of that you did was involved a lot of design, that you opened the box and the logo was on the inside of the box and stuff like that.
So to come back to your earlier question, why would somebody take on a graphic design studio? The services that we offer is that we make our clients look unique for the services for which they hire us. So for example, like a packaging that we are working on right now that you're talking about right now, is that the client wanted not just to be yet another black box over at Sephora, of which there are so many. They really wanted to stand out. And they really wanted people to pick up that box, look at that box, and be intrigued by the box, and actually just really want to be part of that box. And so what we offer to our clients is not just here's a pretty box. We really want to engage their customers to be. And that's a kind of a philosophy that we're applying to our projects from day in and day out.
So it's an experience. So you open the lid of the box and there's a bottle of perfume in there and you've done the graphic design work for that bottle of perfume or whatever, but then also inside the box, there's content and graphic design that completes the full experience. So you're not just going, oh, this is a generic package or a generic wrapper around something that is particular and personal.
You really want to know, you want to know more. We are in a day and age where you're so entrenched with bells and whistles and flashing lights that you really, it's sometimes about small experiences that really make us whole on a day-to-day, and we're trying to help create these experiences for our clients.
So let me ask you about pricing. I think that's near and dear to some of our hearts. And I read an article on the web. I treasure the article because it was talking about graphic design as sort of being the wild, wild west in marketing, that it's sort of the last frontier in that nobody really knows what to charge. You know, graphic, even the designers don't know what to charge. And so there's an ongoing discussion that, you know, it's an aesthetic process. There's a lot of different sort of soft skills and thought that goes into it. And so you can get, take a logo, for instance, you get a logo for $50, for $500, for $5,000, for $50,000. And there's a difference, but maybe to the layman, I look at that and go, why wouldn't I just go for the, you know, the $5? I mean, so help us understand how pricing works in the world of design and what are some of the pitfalls of going for the bottom or, you know, or basing everything just on price.
Yes, it's true. You can actually get, three logos for $5 for your company on Twitter. It's we are not that company. Obviously, we cannot compete with the lowest price out there. Also, there's very little point in us to do so because we really want to help our clients get the most of what it is that they're paying for. What this is that, for example, larger companies who design logos, this is something that's going to go out into the world and that people are going to be encountering every single day. I just walked past the UPS truck, which was just filled with Amazon boxes. This is something that people see millions of times a day. These are impressions that are being made. If somebody's about to start their company and they're sole proprietor and, you know, they just need a small icon that they remotely can relate to, that will be an entirely different experience. So it's, yeah, the pricing structure cannot be expected to be the same if you're thinking of some larger companies who are going out there and really exposing themselves versus some smaller companies or like even sole proprietors that are just need an icon that they need to be identified with, but don't really have very little. They don't know if that's really how they feel, what they want to do or what it is not that they want to do. So that's kind of where the pricing discrepancy comes in, is that, you know, when we work with larger clients, we need to know that their future customers have something that they can live with, that is actually part of their lives, like, for example, the Amazon example that I just gave you.
Yeah, so I get what you're saying, because I walk down the hall of my apartment building or go into the lobby, I don't even have to look. You know, I can, out of the corner of my eye, I know that's an Amazon box. It's got the strip around it. They're not just putting the logo on the box. Part of their branding, part of their design is they got a strip around it. The logo is sort of repeating itself, and that set of colors and the sort of the swoosh that gives it that Amazon impression. I know that my, oh yeah, everybody's ordering Amazon Prime. We got a lot of Amazon Prime members in this building. Or you walk by the Apple store and, you know, it's a perfect example. You don't need words. That image wasn't $5 on Twitter. That image took some thought and some craftsmanship to get it to where you don't even need words. All you need to do is sort of see the general shape and you're like, oh, I know what I'm getting. I'm getting a whole lifestyle choice. I'm getting a design. I'm getting something that means that high-end design is part of my life. So I have clients as a digital strategist, I have clients that will ask about, you know, why can't I just get a $5 logo off of Fiverr? And I tell them, there's another article I pointed to, I tell them about some of the dangers of this, that plagiarism is so common. And that if you're getting something for $5, it isn't even design. That's not what we mean by design. What you're getting is somebody takes a piece of clip art that belongs to somebody else, or a logo that belongs to somebody else, something that some designer has actually put some effort into. And it gets distorted, reshaped, stretched, colored a little bit, maybe a different swoosh under it. And somebody else's font then from a different logo gets brought in. You get kind of a Frankenstein approach. And so I'm like, look, aside from the fact that this is not going to make a good impression on your clients, it would be much better if you have no budget just to use text. You know, just have your company name at the top of your website with text. But I also tell them, look, this is going to come back and bite you. I mean, because there are trademark and copyright restrictions on something like this. So there's an article where, you know, it's sort of you backtrack and you see like, okay, wow, Bulldog Motors has the same logo as Bulldog Sports, and that has the same logo as the San Francisco Bulldogs. It's the same Bulldog that's been just a little bit distorted with a different font and a different color because they got their logos from somebody that charged bottom dollar. And that's sort of the risk, you know, that if you're a large company, you don't even think about this, one hopes. But if you're a medium or company, even, you know, between 14 to 25 employees or a solo business, the temptation is there. You see that guy on Twitter, but don't respond to it.
What we see is that we do a lot of research into the company. We spend a lot of time with our clients and with their marketing directors and see what they have, see what they want, and see where they want to go, what they want to be. What do they ultimately want? What would they like to achieve with their new logo? What is their vision? Where is this company going? And we're going to sit through this, and we're going to have meetings, and we're going to sit down with the board of directors and actually have a lot of people involved, have a lot of initial input, so that we can really see where do people want to go with this, rather than do we just want a pretty picture? Do we just want a circle with a dot on it? And we don't owe you anything because we already just made it. It is important for us that we give a lot of insight and expertise and provoke a thought process that really gets the ultimate results that we are after. And what's most important for the logos that we create and for most of our clients, the longevity that it would have to carry on.
Yeah, so the sustainability aspect of the graphic design is really important. Just like with all marketing, you know, you don't want to build a website that it's not sustainable as a marketing platform for the next 2 years. You're going to have to redo it again anyway. And you can run into that with graphics as well. We always say, you know, dress for success, right? So if put on the suit that represents the place you're going, not necessarily the place you are. You might be a student still just, you know, working your way through college and being an intern, but you dress like you're the Wall Street broker because that's where you intend to go, for instance. So putting more into your logo is really important. And not just your logo, but all your packaging and graphic design, the presentation of your company, because it's all that suit of clothes.
Yes. I mean, what's really kind of sets us apart from competition is that Lush Media has been in business for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have we have a level of expertise. We've been doing this for a long time. We have a large assortment of clients. And what happens is that we have a lot of exposure. We've seen a lot of things. We've seen things that work. We've seen things that don't work. We put in this expertise into each and every one of our projects. That we know that people want the Apple logo tomorrow, and they want it to be ideally $50. Or that's really great, but that doesn't happen over time. So we have a lot of expertise. We can bring these things to the table, and this is to the benefit of our clients.
Well, that brings up another question. So, Pierre, you're a business out there that is choosing between design firms. And, you know, lots of people have, I mean, of course, you're going to look at their portfolio. You're going to work at other clients. They look at other clients they've worked with. But now you run into a situation where you've got two or three design companies you're looking at that have great portfolios. They have lots of different companies they've worked with that look solid. And I'm not a designer. It's not going to be something that I'm going to be able to aesthetically judge the superiority of one over the other. So how does somebody like me vet a design company? How do I choose a design company if I'm not a designer in the first place? How do I know who to pick?
Well, like I said earlier, it is important that the company that you ultimately choose to go with has been around for a little while. It is absolutely, it has no harm that you can actually ask references. If you ask for three quotes from three different companies and you've done your homework and they all have anywhere from 5 to 10 employees and they've been in business anywhere from 5 to 10 years and they all have solid social media presence and online presence and they have good clients and the pricing all comes in at the same time. It has a lot to do with the synergy that you're going to have with this company. Are you going to feel comfortable with the people that you're in contact with? And if you are, then you can easily ask a reference, ask one of their clients who's been with them for a few years and how has their experience been? And that will tell you a lot because those people have nothing to gain from that conversation other than to just tell you the truth. And feel free to do so. And if it turns out that the graphic design agency that you're looking to speak to is hesitant in giving you these references, well, then maybe it's a good time to maybe back away and look at the other two that you've selected.
I love that you pointed out, or that you mentioned, having a social presence, you know, because that's one of the ways I vet almost any type of company. If I'm comparing apples to apples, I'll look and see, you know, why would I want to work with another marketing partner that doesn't do marketing? You know, so if I get, like, they're not on Instagram and they're a graphic design company, I'm like, why are you not in the hottest place for graphic design? Why do you not show up there? It's free. I would expect you to sort of, it's not like you need permission to get in, right? And so I'm like, yeah, you know, I wouldn't work with a PR person that had never been written up in a magazine. I would never work with a graphic design company that had some of their images flowing around the web. I would look for that. So that's a great call out. Let me ask you, what is your relationship with roles within the company, like the branding officer in a larger company, or maybe for a smaller company, they've brought on sort of a third-party branding strategist? They're the kind that focus sort of more on the message, like what is our core message as a brand, our underlying theme, and they're the kind that focus more on style, sort of like what's our color set, and you know, what's our emphasis color, and what's our thought color, and what fonts do we use? How does Lush work, and graphic designers in general work with those roles in those companies?
Well, usually our general main point of contact with companies is the marketing director or their chief branding officer. And earlier on, I said that we'd like to work with companies who are anywhere from 5 to 100 plus employees, is because what happens there is that we have a direct point of contact. It is important that we have a liaison with the company that, and that somebody has a clear vision and has the time to actually execute that vision, if that be consistent colors or consistent use of the logo or fonts. It is usually we're being asked to follow their lead. They're saying, okay, we're going to run about 10 to 15 advertisements in the local publication, or we're doing about 50 online ads and we need digital assets for those. They basically give us the assets and they say, okay, this is what we're running with. This is what we want it to look like. Now use your creativity to execute that and make us look the best way you can.
So that's good to hear. You know, for those of you that are new to the show, you know, what I do at MadPipe is I'm the external marketing director for a variety of companies. So rather than having a parking space and a mahogany desk at your job, I give you just the time you need. And so I'm maybe one of the types of people that the graphic designer would say work with and liaise with. And what I hear you saying, Pierre, is you need somebody within the company that speaks your language and has a vision and understanding of where the brand is going. Because if you don't have that, then it's really hard to sort of pull graphic design ideas out of thin air. You have to have a meaningful conversation around the company objectives. So let me ask you, that sort of brings up another question. What are some areas where we need to get a designer involved fairly early in the game? Like, let's say I'm thinking about building a website for my company, or I want to start doing an ad campaign or print initiative. At what point do I get the web designer first? Do I get the graphic designer first? At what point should we inject the graphic design conversation into the conversation?
I would suggest it would be very, very early on. This should be calculated into any business model, any financial model, and setting up a business that you need to leave room for creativity. People like to see creativity, and this is not something you could just slap on afterwards. This is something that needs to, you're growing with it. You're growing up with it. It's almost like having strange analogy, but having small children eating a large variety of foods, this is something that they'll do for the rest of their lives rather than giving your children chicken fingers for the rest of their life, and that's what they'll be eating for the rest of their lives. What I mean to say is that if you're exposing your clients to be to innovative thinking through design, is that, once again, like I said earlier, is that people are intrigued and they want to see more. They want to see your company succeed. They want to be with your company, and very, very much as an example, as you were saying, like an Apple, which is completely driven on design, that just supports what I'm saying to you right now.
So it's, I love that, that, you know, basically you don't want, I could coin a phrase off of what you said, chicken finger strategy. So we want a healthier approach. And I think, you know, there's also a need to expand on, because of that, because we need to understand why we get a designer involved early in the game. We need to understand what design really is. And I think a lot of people think design is just the picture. You know, you're getting in Photoshop and you're using a paintbrush and you're drawing a picture, or it's just producing, you know, something that is just the visual part of it, you know, in terms of a graphic, an individual graphic. But design is much more than that. We talked about packaging earlier, but you're also doing layout, and there's strategy to that, like where the images appear in relation to the rest of the content on a given page. So for instance, if you're producing a newsletter, a brochure, an ad campaign, there's the whole relationship of all the content to every other piece of content. Can you give us some insight into the expertise a company like yours brings to that process? It isn't just a pretty picture.
Yes, it's very much a layout, and it's not just a layout as thinking of a piece of paper that's 8.5 by 11 with the pictures go on the left and the text goes on the right. Really what it is, it's a layout of thinking of how you would like your company design, how you're like your company develop going forward in the future. Meaning that if you're thinking what you were saying earlier, is that you want to dress like what you want to be tomorrow, and not dress what you want to be today. Because today you started your company and all you can think of is how incredibly broke you are. But you want to start thinking about how you're going to get these new customers and how these new customers are going to view your company going forward. It's kind of like, as it were, it's like developing a lifestyle and seeing, having potential future customers seeing you or viewing your company in a certain way. So, yeah, so that's what I mean by layout. We kind of pave the way, and we help companies being viewed a certain way, and how they relate to that company emotionally going forward.
So that's like, you know, we did another episode on thought leadership. And one of the things we sort of called out is thinking about where is this train going? You know, that's one of the criteria for being a thought leader in your industry, is having a vision of where your company is going to be, not just at this moment or next quarter, but in the future, and where you're going to take your industry. And so design, the way you're portraying it, is that design is living into the company you intend to be going forward. It isn't just right now, this is my situation. It's you're dressing for the party, as you said. So I have one last question to sort of wind the show down, Pierre, and that is design, digital design versus print. So it's sort of like this. Does digital design require a different set of qualifications, or designing for additional digital media require different qualifications than designing for print? Is print even still a thing? You know, business cards, printed flyers, is it sort of passe anyway, and so I don't need to look for a special skill set? What's your take on print/digital?
So this, when we started off this podcast, I started off saying that we've been around for about 20 years. So 20 years ago, there was very little web out there. We were predominantly focused on print and advertisements and magazine layouts. We did lots of ads for newspapers and, like you said, business cards and postcards. This is still a pretty major component of the business. People, postcards are still extremely effective, and that's not only because the post office says so it is. It is because a lot of people still like things that are tangible, like business cards. We don't design ordinary business cards. The business cards that we create now versus the business cards that we created many years ago, they look very, very different. They are meant to be a lasting impression, not just say, yeah, that's another white card with some logo on the top, some text in the middle, you know, next. As far as printing for digital, most of our work is digital now, but we've taken the skill set that we've created over all these years, and we're just applying them to digital. It's just that the sheet of paper has changed, but it's not that it is very different. It is, we just adapt and we move on. And things like phrases that we use, eye levels, bi level, which is typical in supermarket strategies, these things still apply for our websites, believe it or not. Don't go past the fold. Websites don't have a fold, but you know, at the same time, we have to adhere to these same kind of rules. So our design skill set that we've developed over the years and that we have working in our studio, designers have to be fluent in both.
So it's a great answer. So you think about modern business cards, and they often are something more like a translucent square made of plastic with rounded edges and a laser-etched logo in the middle or something like that. That's not a simple guy. You call up your local printer and print me 500 cards for $50. So I get it. And so digital has had an influence, therefore, in the design of print media now. We sort of expect almost that 3D-ness or special effect or whatever. Some of the design culture that we have in digital is carrying now over into print. And so it's interesting that it goes the other way, too. You sort of have said that, you know, it's good that a company has a long-term experience in the print world and doing design back before digital became so popular, because you can carry those, just as digital design now influences print, you can carry the principles of print design into digital and use that to sort of inform the process and bring more expertise. So that's something you want to look at. Just because somebody's 20 years old and just started their digital design firm doesn't mean that maybe they have the experience from that world that's necessary to ensure a proper digital design. So great answers, Pierre. It's been wonderful. You've been listening to the MadPipe Marketing Madcast, where we talk about marketing strategy and bring marketing insights to businesses and nonprofits. For more information from Pierre at Lush Media, visit lushmedia.com. That's Lush, L-U-S-H, media.com. And to get more episodes like this, visit madpipe.com/podcast or find us on iTunes or Stitcher. Pierre, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you very much, Daniel, for having me.
The MadPipe Madcast.